BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
How about that? We're both here in a timely fashion, not coming in a huff. It's a brand new day here on Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub coming to you from the Tom Fear Tire Studios here in Waltham. Had myself ample time to get here. Learned my lesson from the last time we were both here doing the show a couple of weeks back. Chris left the home at 9:40.
Wow, that's impressive.
9:40, yep. Got here just in time, enough time to take a breather and download the Brown Report, and ready to go. So how you doing, pal?
I'm
you
good.
Too? You good? You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to get to today, and especially, well, we'll have the first Sports Hub Celtics show of the year. Also very timely there. Haven't they played a handful of games already? Well, I mean, look, what can you do? But the first Sports Hub Celtics show of the year will come your way in an hour. We have Brian Robb with us, as he is normally wont to do, producing this show. So there's a lot to talk about with that team because, well, it turns out like any concerns you had about their defense, they're warranted because their defense stinks. So we'll talk about them in an hour. But in the meantime, the Patriots, let's start with them in this now enormous game that I feel like I don't think it's hyperbolic to say, Chris, that their season hangs in the balance tomorrow. If they're to go in there and lose at MetLife Stadium tomorrow, the rest of this season is just going to be, well, it'll still be compelling and exciting from a content standpoint, because if they're to lose, and a lot of it hinges on the play of Mac Jones, well, we're still going to get that whole story. And it doesn't feel like Bill Belichick is in any way, shape, or form committed to his first-round draft pick quarterback last year.
No.
And then you get this news late yesterday with like 45 minutes to an hour to go in Felger and Maz from Mike Giardi, NFL Network. Per source, Patriots quarterback Mac Jones is dealing with numbness in the toes on his left foot as he continues to recover from the left ankle injury that sidelined him for 3 weeks. Didn't impact Mac's on-field prep for the Jets, but keep an eye on it. Bears notice some favoring. Now, I have to assume that this source that talked to Mike Giardi is from the Mac Jones camp. And that in of itself is kind of an annoying term, the Mac Jones camp. Like, it took Brady...
Took a while to have a camp, didn't
yeah,
it?
And I hate to really make any kind of comparisons to Tom Brady, to really any quarterback, but especially the quarterback here, but... You're right. Like, it took a long time for Brady to have people at a camp and for him to be kind of a giant pain in the ass and to ask why and push back on Bill Belichick. I'd say, what, like 13, 14 years maybe? Maybe when he first got hooked up with his now ex-wife. But either way, it took a while. Mac Jones is a camp a year in? Yeah, I guess that's just today's young Gen Z athlete and, you know, first-round pick is going to have his people and been surrounded by it. Like, I get it. But... I don't know. Like, it feels like you got to pick a side here in a lot of ways. Like, you're with Bill and the way he's handled this. Are you on Mac Jones? Do you like the way he's pushed back on Bill? And I do kind of appreciate that, but it does feel a little bit premature. And for this news to come out, I just don't understand how this benefits Mac Jones in any way, shape, or form. If this came from his camp, as I assume it did, dealing with numbness in the toes and his left foot, it's too much information. I think it makes him look bad going into this game, and I think it's a built-in excuse if he's to play poorly. And, again, it does him no service. Numbness in the toes on his left foot? You're going to put that out here to this fan base and this audience? I mean, the calls we got on it in that hour remaining in Felger and Maz yesterday, people were like, you got to be kidding me. And we were all like immediately kind of ragging on him. Just say it's too much info. And Maz was right yesterday saying, shut your mouth. Like, don't say anything. It just makes him look bad. If you're going to put something like this out there and you're going to have kind of a built-in excuse, just say he's still dealing with an issue with his foot and the ankle. That's it. Numbness in the toes, numbness in his little tootsies. Oh, it's such a bad look, Chris.
Well, here's the thing. I completely agree with you. Do you lend any credence to the idea that maybe it didn't come from Max Camp, that maybe it got leaked from the Patriots because it gives them an out when the guy's off the injury report? And by the way, I feel like now if he's dealing with something and other teams have noticed it, like, don't they have to put him back on the injury report?
Yeah, you mentioned this yesterday.
Yeah, it's... like, wouldn't they have to put him back on and be like, yeah, probable toe numbness,
yeah,
or whatever? You know, but what if it comes from... What if it comes from the other side? What if it comes from the Belichick camp? So the idea is if he's underperforming early or there's an issue, it's not Bill doing what he's done for the last 3-4 weeks, which is fan the flames of a quarterback controversy. It's, oh, well, he wasn't actually 100% healthy, and I told you this would be a health-mandated decision, so I had to go to Zappy.
Yeah, I mean, there is... I can understand why you maybe think that. The only reason I don't believe that is, you know, sometimes when Mike has put out information like this, it is always quarterback-centric. In other words, I think that Mike has been close with some of the sucky quarterbacks here before. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, and now Mac Jones.
I don't know if I put it that way, but...
Well, I will. I mean, they all stink. Garoppolo, Brissett, now Mac Jones. So I think he, you know, he's got a penchant for... getting info from the suck quarterbacks of Patriots past and now present. Either way, is it hyperbolic to say that Patriots, Jets tomorrow, this, like, their season hinges in the balance?
I don't think it's hyperbolic because I think if they lose this game, you sort of get a little bit of that, like, 2009 tipping point where guys are looking around and sort of, like, dumping the Kool-Aid out when no one's looking. Because I think you want to talk about division and whether it's being handled right. I think a lot of the locker room is behind Mac Jones. He's a captain. I think a lot of guys like him. Guys saw him take the team to the playoffs last year. I think this is a veteran team. If you look at, like, their average age, they're the oldest team in the AFC. So these guys would relate more to sort of the veteran standpoint of, hey, you don't lose your job to injury. So I think if they were to be in a situation where Mac gets yanked or yo-yoed and they lose the game, I think it could sort of devolve into a 2009 type of situation where, you know, Belichick's on the sidelines saying, I just can't get this team to play the way we need to play, and it's so bleeping frustrating. And I cover that 09 team, and there were guys who, you know, just didn't buy in. They just didn't buy in, and it was exacerbated by what happened in Indianapolis that year.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it would be over in terms of, like, you know, any time in terms of playoff potential. But, again, content-wise, bitchiness will continue. What's he going to do with the quarterbacks? This will become a bigger national story. I mean, like, we'll win, but I think a lot of Patriots fans will be extremely disappointed if they fall to 3-5 and lose to the Jets of all teams. You buy into this Jets thing, their record, how a lot of people have them in their top 10 of their power rankings, or do you think it's kind of a fraudulent record that they've got off to this year?
I mean, I don't think it's completely fraudulent, but I do think water finds its level, and I think somehow they're winning despite getting next to nothing out of the quarterback. In terms of Zach Wilson, I mean, he's won every game since he came back. He's 4-0, but he's completing 57% of his passes, and he's thrown one touchdown pass.
They're terrified of him.
They are terrified of him. And their defense is, the defense is legit, but I also think the Patriots are catching him at the right time in terms of they have major injuries. Breece Hall has been their best player on offense, the running back, the rookie. He's out for the year. Their best offensive lineman, Elijah Vera Tucker, is not going to be able to play. They don't have their top receiver in Corey Davis. So they're catching them, I think, at the right time, and I think they're catching them in a stance where Zach Wilson's going to be exposed, which he hasn't been exposed up to this point.
Yeah, the offensive line is going to be an issue. Them losing Breece Hall is huge. I still think, though, like, you know, with David Andrews going to be out, so he was on the injury report again yesterday. He's in the concussion protocol, so he's going to be out. I think the offensive line hasn't been playing very well at all for the Pats. Who's going to stop a wrecking ball like Quinnen Williams? You know, I think they're going to generate a lot of pressure on Mac Jones as well. And I think there's the Patriots' sucky run defense you got to take into account here, too. Now, they brought in
James Robinson
that they traded for earlier in the week, and he's decent enough.
He's solid.
But the run defense in the post-Brady era, I brought this stat up earlier this week. Patriots are 5-16 when they allow more than 120 yards rushing. So I think tomorrow, wow. Look, they're terrified of Zach Wilson. So, but if Zach Wilson can play like, you know, 09 Mark Sanchez, is a game manager and hands off, They don't turn it over. They rely on their defense to dominate. I do think the Jets can win this game. I like the Jets tomorrow, and there's other intangibles I'll get into, and one of them, like, this is really the main reason why I like the Jets. But on that run defense thing, again, 5-16 when they allow more than 120 yards rushing. You know, they got ran all over last week against that wretched Chicago team. Jets' last three games, all wins. Now, granted, they've now missing Vera Tucker, the best offensive lineman, and Hall, but they ran for 135, 179, and 155 yards. Now, James Robinson, solid enough pickup. I just do think they're still going to try to focus on the run game tomorrow, and I don't like the Patriots up front.
Yeah, to me, this is more sort of like the Cleveland game, where it was like the same thing. Crappy quarterback, great running game, but the quarterback, I think the X factor here is Zach Wilson last year could run. I haven't seen a ton of him since he came back from the meniscus and the bone bruise, but from what I have seen, it doesn't look like he's running as much.
He's not. At least, so I watched that full game last week against Denver on the flight back from Nashville, and there's times you're like, dude, you could have just picked up a first down, and he's hesitant to do it because I don't think he feels right.
Yeah, I agree. And so to me, that's the thing. The Patriots obviously struggled giving up 243 yards against the Bears, but I think a lot of those struggles stem from the same thing they struggled against with Baltimore, having to account for the quarterback in the run game. I don't know if they have to do that this week because, again, I mean, last year Wilson ripped off a 52-yard run, but I don't think he's that guy this year, and I don't think he's going to want to run around like that. So if he's just a poor, deficient pocket passer and that's all they have to worry about, then I think you can load up to stop the run, and because Breece Hall is not there, I think you can do it. So I sort of put this in the bucket of the Cleveland game in terms of, hey, great running team. They run on everybody else, but I don't know if they'll be able to run on the Patriots. I don't think they will.
So the intangibles, and maybe I'm buying too much into this, but I do believe in the intangibles, and it's one of the reasons I like the Jets, maybe the main reason I like the Jets tomorrow. They can use the fact they're underdogs at home, I think, is a huge motivational advantage. That the number keeps going up. Last I saw, there's some places that have the Patriots favored by 3.
Interesting.
And I think this is an enormous game for Robert Saleh, that franchise as a whole. They know what the Patriots represent. The Patriots have beat them, was it 12 straight? And they're like this immovable object. But they're vulnerable now. And they can make a massive statement in defeating tomorrow at their home stadium. And they can say, like, look, we're better than you now in this division. Enjoy the basement in the AFC East. And the other thing, this stood out to me. Rich Simini, who covers the Jets for ESPN, reading here from, again, Rich Simini, ESPN. Jets defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich makes it clear that last year's 54-13 loss to New England still doesn't sit well because he felt New England ran up the score. Quote, I remember the score. There were a lot of things, you know. I remember it being 40-plus and shots still being taken on us. Been looking forward to this one. Everyone's very aware of what went down last year.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's like a payback aspect here. And again, they're incredibly flawed offensively. But you said the same thing. We all said the same thing about the Bears last week. So, I don't know. I mean, if old numbtoes here can't really is afraid of people falling around him and this is going to be a detriment to his game, I like the Jets tomorrow. Again, it's mostly has to do with the intangibles and that defensive front and the Patriots' offensive line flaws. I just think, at the very least, how about this? Take the under. I don't think there's going to be a lot of offensive firepower from either team.
I have two questions for you quickly before we go to break. One, do you still have the fever? it sounds like it's broken.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay, that's question one. Two, you mentioned intangibles. Do you put any stock into Belichick hating the Jets with the power of 1,000 suns, and now he can go to number 2 all-time on the NFL all-time coaching wins against, of all franchises, the Jets.
Yeah.
In their house.
I do, and I think he's going to be dialed in this week, him, but I just think with the way that he's handled the quarterback here and the quarterback situation and how they looked and just, I think you saw quit, too, in the second half against the Bears. I just wonder whether or not the whole group collectively is now going to get behind him that quickly, you know? Like, I'm sure the veterans will, your McCourties, your Slaters, guys like that. But I don't know, some of these younger players, I don't know, you look at this guy right now and be like, I don't know, you've kind of botched this whole thing. Look how you're handling Mac Jones. Why do I believe in you? Like, why is this, the Jets, they matter to you? Like,
yeah, but the flip side is, you know, we were winning games with our third string quarterback until last week, and the guy still has 6 rings, and if they get off to a fast start, or they, I mean, I always tell you, winning's the ultimate deodorant. All Bill has to do is win this game, and I'm not even saying he's lost the locker room, but if there is an undercurrent of dissatisfaction or there is an undercurrent there of rebellion, it's gone the moment they win.
Yeah. And then, boy, the Blanami is going to be so bad next week, too. That's okay. We're more than prepared for it. See, he motivated Mac Jones. And if he goes out there and throws for like 300 yards and 3 touchdowns, this is just what he needed. Bill's the master manipulator. He wanted to lose the game to Chicago so he could pass Hales against the Jets. Oh, I mean,
you're definitely going to get that. Yeah, you're 100% going to get that.
I mean, we got one of those yesterday.
Did like, you?
What is wrong with you people?
He wanted to lose the game.
There was a guy that literally called and said that.
I love it.
You put it past him. What's wrong with you? Seek help if you think that. All right, well, we're here. And if you'd like to join us and talk about tomorrow's game and Mac Jones's frozen tootsies, 617-779-0985. There is a narrative that has continued to bother me about going back to Monday's game and something that happened there. I want to touch on that when we come back here on Casper and Murray. Good morning, everyone.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Casper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Casper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The whole stadium is chanting for Zappy. What are we doing, Patriot fans? Like, what are we doing?
It's fun to say, Zappy.
Zappy, it's got a, yeah, it's got a.
But
to
why
it.
Is it a problem?
It's a problem because you have Mac Jones, who hasn't played much football. He's still a very young football player coming back from a high ankle, which he could have gone and had a surgery or done something other than, you know, just rehab and pushed himself back out there sooner. And he looked good. He was running for first downs. You know, the offensive system changed when Mac was in there versus when Zappy was in there. So number one, the offenses were completely different. Zappy's in, Zappy's under center. He's under center running the football. Mac's in, it's gun runs.
Former Patriot turned talking head Rob Ninkovich on ESPN shaming the Patriots fan base for the chanting of Zappy, Zappy. The Zappy fever running wild there for about 10 or 15 minutes on Monday night. Oh, man. That was a fun 10 to 15 minutes or so.
You must have been loving that, huh?
It was great, Chris. And it also, like, it was tough not to get wrapped up into. It was like edge of your seat stuff. And it also, selfishly, I was like, holy crap, it's happening again. And I didn't think so. Like, I thought there was maybe something with this kid. It felt like, if nothing else, I liked his presence in the pocket. There was certainly more continuity with the offense. And it turns out maybe that has to do with some of the play calling more than anything else. That To dumb it down, it seems like the good plays are for Zappy and the bad plays are for Mac Jones when it comes from Matt Patricia. But be that as it may, for 10 or 15 minutes on Monday night, it's like, holy crap, this is unbelievable. And I felt like, here we go, like from a content standpoint, for the fan base, like this is great. And then the wheels completely fell off. But the Zappy chants and the shaming of the Patriots fan base that we've gotten from the likes of Rob Ninkovich and now apparently Devin McCourty as well. He made a weekly appearance over on the Greg Hill Show on EEI, and he said yesterday, I've been here a long time. I've been booed. We've been booed. Tom's been booed. I understand as a veteran we play in an area that's very spoiled in what it expects from the team. When I got here, everything was about how do you win 3 Super Bowls. When you're in the NFL for a while, you realize we got that down. But that's not a normal task at hand to say you got to win 3 Super Bowls to be considered a good football team. I think it kind of is what it is, and overall we've been really focused this week on trying to get a win. But he's saying the fan base spoiled. You have Rob Ninkovich,
yes,
former teammate, finger wagging. I'm not going to put up with it. I'm sorry.
Really?
Nope, no.
Well, okay, I want to hear what you have to say.
No shame at all.
Because I agree with both of them.
No shame at all on the Patriots fan base.
Money.
There's a famous quote that I like from this author, Terry Pratchett, that I think sums up the mentality of people. This is just what people are, guys. The crowd that applauds your coronation is the same crowd that will applaud your beheading. People like a show. People want a show. It still is at the end of the day. And I've said this since day one being back here full time. I know it crosses Felger, but I don't hold sports up as like this sacred cow. Like, it's still all entertainment to me. No different than, yes, it's unpredictable, and that's the great thing about sports, but No, Tim, at the end of the day, in terms of an entertainment standpoint, Chris, it's no different than a TV show and something on Netflix, a movie, what have you. It's still entertainment, so people want a show. And with Mac Jones, they look at him and are like, okay, yeah, you were a asterisky Pro Bowler last year, and this, there may be some upside. You made the playoffs, got spanked in them. Who knows? Maybe you're Andy Dalton at best. But still, so far this season, you're costing us games, and you come in and immediately throw this horrific pick. You stink. So we want Zappy. We've seen better play with Zappy. 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 I don't, no finger wagging from me. This is just the mentality of people today. If you're not going to make me happy, then F off.
Yeah, so here's where I think those guys are right. If it went down the way you described it, which was it only started after he threw that horrible pick, I could live with it. But it started from like the moment the guy was out there. It did happen
after that first series.
After the first three and out, people were trying to start Zappy chants, and they got booed after the second series when they went three and out. So I just sort of feel like, you know, it was. I know what you're saying in terms of people want instant gratification, they want a show, but this was like the Roman Colosseum. People wanted to see a death, and they wanted to see the death of Mac Jones' Patriots career. And I don't understand how that helps you as a Patriot fan. And look, you pay the money, you fund not only Mac Jones' salary, but frankly, you know, our salaries here, and so whatever. But I don't think it's unfair to point out when there's sort of hypocrisy among the fans. You know, the fans obviously are a check on those of us in the media, and the fans are a check on the players. But I've never believed that in that relationship that you can't be a check on the fans or criticize the fans. And part of it is this, and I pointed this out too, it's the hypocrisy of, well, wait, what happened last year when you were telling me this? I'm not saying this guy's Tom Brady, but I'm not saying he's Tom Brady. And how dare you put a ceiling on him? I mean, he could be Tom Brady. And then, like, all of a sudden, you've decided now, the same fans, to put a ceiling on him after 11 quarters of Bailey Zappi? I mean, that's hypocritical. There's no other way to put it.
Oh, people went way out of line with how they overrated him last year. I'm with you on that. But, you know, ultimately, the people are fickle. And I can understand that. But they shouldn't have jumped to conclusions like that he is going to be, like, the next great thing. And so, I mean, that was all premature, but... Yeah, I don't know. I think the fans were right. I had no problem with this on Monday. But, boy, it was quick. Even I was shocked after that first series. Like, he didn't even really do much in the Zappy, Zappy. Like, wow, you people are lathered up. But
They were. And look, I get it. But I would just also say this, though, too, because there's no more loyal fan base than the Patriot fan. There's no fan base that defends its team more than the Patriots fan base. So, and aligns more with the players. It's like, you know, there are times it feels like, you could have a player, we always talk about this, you could have a player go the last Boy Scout on the field, and they'd look it up if you haven't seen the movie, look up the movie, and they'd be defending the guy and talking about, well, you know, he was held on that pass interference two series earlier. You know, it's okay that he just whipped out the gun and shot that guy, which is what happens in the last Boy Scout. But just understand that your players, having been in that locker room, that didn't sit well with them. It's not just, you know, McCourty obviously is a current player, Ninkovich is a past player, but I'm telling you, McCourty's opinion is not a minority opinion in that locker room. It did not sit well with them the way Mac Jones was treated at home.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think that all falls in the lap of Bill Belichick, and I think what the fans were simply saying that night is that Zappy should have started against the Bears, and it couldn't have been botched any worse. And the one thing,
terrible.
Too, like, I know you don't, but I'm going to ask anyway, like, the plan... Three series. So you mean to tell me what? If he went out there and threw a couple of touchdowns in those three series, he would have pulled Mac Jones? No shot. No shot at all.
I know. That wasn't... what I think happened was that Bill did sort of go into it with a plan of he was going to rotate, right? He was going to bring Zappy in. And maybe the plan was to bring Zappy in after the third series. And then he'd play one series and then you bring Mac back. But after Mac struggled... And they were down double digits, and Zappy scored a touchdown right away. I think Bill started chasing the game. He started chasing the win, and he abandoned that plan. So that's where he's being. I think this is Bill's the master of this. You know, he will sort of take a kernel of truth and turn it into the whole thing. Did he originally have a plan that included putting Zappy in at that juncture of the game? Sure. But I think the actual plan was to then go back to Mac, which he never did. And now he's sort of posturing like that was the original plan all along, or that I was going to go back to Mac, but then the game got out of hand. It's like, no, you started chasing the win. You thought Zappy gave you a better chance to win, which is fine, but then you have to admit that, but you don't want to admit that. So now you have this phony plan.
just overall, like, was that as shocking a result that you've seen, at least post-Brady? Because I think that was the low point of the post-Brady era. Oof. On Monday night.
I mean, we were talking about it after the game. I was walking down to the locker room with Bedard, and we were sort of just quickly talking. And what came up for both of us was that 2010 loss they had to the Mangini Browns with the Chancey Stuckey fumble Ruski in Cleveland. Like, that was one that stuck out to me as, like, wow, that is a shocking result for the Patriots. I definitely did not see that loss coming, particularly in that manner.
All right, we'll get to your calls coming up. One open line you want to join us, 617-779-0985. We'll dive into whether or not Matt Patricia is calling certain plays for when Bailey Zappi's been out there and, you know, basically giving the crap plays to Mac Jones. Some interesting commentary from Chris Sims, who was here for a cup of coffee at one point. I do think he's as informed as anybody else. We'll hear that and get to your calls coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
There's something going on in New England. He's pissed them off. This is a real thing. I know it. Florio knows it. I don't know the exact details, whether he talked about the coaches behind them to the Kraft family, or he talked about the two new offensive coordinators to Belichick. There is an issue there. There is. I mean, there's a part of me that the game really out. I want to go, ooh, they called those plays with Mac Jones, and they put Bailey Zappi in, and they called the, you know, some. I want to be like, were they setting it up for failure? What was going on there? Yeah. The whole thing was just un-New England-like and weird to me.
Chris Sims, late this week, talking about the quarterback situation, what's going on with Mac Jones and Bill Belichick and the coaching staffs. Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So some interesting commentary there. Feels informed, and he also later speculated on his podcast at Chris Sims that, you know, in watching this, and it's something Greg Bedard talked about on his spot with Felger and Maz earlier in the week, Chris, that, you know, there's been different play calling for Bailey Zappi as there was for Mac Jones. And so is it a conscious decision being made by Patricia, Judge, Belichick, you know, the coaching staff as a whole, and how they've handled these two? And, I mean, how does this get fixed if there is something going on like this? Can Bill Belichick also, you know, swallow his pride here and just finally come out and say at some point, especially if Mac Jones goes out there and, you know, throws it all over the field and the Patriots come out of there with a win, they turn their season around tomorrow, and just finally say, like, yes, no, this is my quarterback? Because so, for whatever reason, he's been hesitant to do so.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that's really stood out to me, and I thought Felger raised a great point yesterday. And after years of covering Bill, what I've come to realize is that a lot of times what he doesn't say is more important than what he does say. And so when he said this week, Mac Jones will be our quarterback, and was just really adamant and defiant about only talking about this week, the exchange with Phil Perry where he's calling legitimate questions about who the starter is, hypotheticals, basically saying anything beyond like practice today and who's going to start on Sunday is a hypothetical. And he also said, don't try and trap me. I mean, just that level of resistance to naming, you would think, the guy who is your presumptive franchise quarterback of the future, the key to contending for Super Bowls again, that's telling. And it's telling that he said Mac Jones will be our quarterback, not Mac Jones is our quarterback.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, and it feels to me like there's still a leash on him. You know, if he goes out there and even is sucky tomorrow and throws a couple of first half picks, like, I still think we might end up seeing Bailey Zappi tomorrow, too.
I wouldn't be surprised by it. I really wouldn't. Especially to your point, if Bill senses anything along the lines of what we discussed, which is like, hey, this could be a tipping point for the season. And above all, that's why I just dismissed the idea of, you mentioned there were callers saying, oh, Bill intentionally lost to the... He's not wired that way. And so if there's any sense in his mind, like, oh man, we're going to lose this game and we're going to lose to the Jets, Zappy's the only hope, then I could totally see him putting Zappy in the game. And then this thing just becomes a bigger mess. It is going to be really interesting to see. I think Bill's faith gets tested if, let's say the first half, Max, you know, he's not playing terribly, but he's not great. He turns the ball over again, and they're down by 4 to 7 points. Does he just ride it out and say, okay, start of the third quarter, Max still our guy, we'll come back, or does he pull the plug?
All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Tim and Ashley, you're first up here on Gasper and Murray this morning. Hello, Tim.
Hi, guys. Chris, two wins, right? Two wins from Zappy. No injuries, march up and down the field, okay? Then obviously Monday night, Mac playing. He definitely looked hurt to me. I don't care what anybody says. He got ran for the third time. He got tackled. He went down. He actually looked at the ankle, got up, kind of, you know, you could tell he was gingerly on that ankle. What I'm saying to you is, how can Bill put the team in this position? Not put the kid on the shelf for a while. Who is making him put him in? It's almost as if he's pushed to make him go in. Zappy was perfectly fine on cruise control. Why don't you ask him that question? Hey, Bill, why would you put that guy in? You're already winning. What is the purpose of them putting Mac in there? It does them no service.
So on October the 12th, Belichick was asked about Mac Jones and Zappy, and the question essentially was, does Zappy's performance give you more leeway in terms of when you bring Mac back? And he said the two are totally independent. And he was pretty consistent leading up to that when Mac was healthy enough to go, that Mac would play. And so I think that's sort of the answer to the question. And now Mac Jones isn't even on the injury report at all. He's not on the injury report for this game against the Jets. So I think that's sort of where it is. Now, in terms of the two wins with Zappy, maybe you can speak to those more than I can, Jim, because, you know, obviously you were the band leader for Zappy Fever here.
It was actually my dad, but okay.
Okay. So you know, you capitalized on your dad and brought Zappy Fever to the masses. But for me, and he did play, I will say, you know, I was impressed against Cleveland. And there were moments against Cleveland I was like, maybe they have something here. But you do have to remember, yes, they won those two games. Great, great. But essentially, since Brady left, the Patriots have been a team that only beats bad teams and bad quarterbacks. And those two defenses are bottom five in the league in points allowed. So what I'm saying is, who's to say Mac couldn't have beaten those teams if he was able to play and was fully healthy? How much of that was Zappy and how much of it was those teams stink?
Yeah, and I do. Look, I think that Bailey Zappy sucked in that second half and he was exposed, and there his certain flaws that you can do nothing about, like his height.
Yeah.
You know, you looked at in the second half and how many balls were being knocked down, and it's like, oh boy, he really did turn into a pumpkin here. So, well, that's over. But up until that point.
So disappointing.
Up until that point. Well, because, Chris, I did like the, and especially in the Browns game, he showed command of the pocket.
He did.
The confidence in the pocket, the way he moved around. And it just felt like there was more continuity there. And maybe as, you know, as this this onion is being peeled apart here in the last couple of weeks, and we see what's going on, maybe that has to do with more about the coaching and the plays that they're calling for Zappy and that they weren't for Mac Jones.
Well, I think, you know what, there is some truth to that, right, in terms of, but I don't think it's for the reason people think, Jim. Like, I don't think there's I honestly don't think there's a conscious effort to embarrass Mac Jones or you know, put him in a bad position. Do I think there's a conscious effort to put Bailey Zappy in a good position? Yes, but that has nothing to do with Mac Jones. It has to do with the fact he's a rookie quarterback. So you want to run plays that put him in a position to succeed. I think Mac Jones has a little longer leash because he made that Pro Bowl last year. So if anything, I look at it and say, hey, Matt Patricia, maybe you could learn from some of the play calling you're doing when Bailey Zappi's in the game, because you're saying, oh, he's a rookie, I don't want to put him in a bad situation. Like, remember Cleveland? What, 3rd and 10 before the half, and they're like, we'll just take the field goal. They hand it off. They get a 30-yard touchdown from Ramondre Stevenson. They're handling Zappy with kid gloves, and that's helping him. Maybe they need to do some of that with Mac Jones.
Joey and Weymouth on the Patriots defense. Go ahead, Joey.
Hey, guys. So one of the big storylines of last year was there were too many like voices in the coaching staff on the defensive side. And Monday night, what stood out to me, obviously the quarterback situation was botched, but Justin Fields ran all over them. And Bill, whatever Bill has a plan for the quarterbacks got blown up because the defense couldn't get off the field. So to go a little off topic, what's the situation with the coaching staff on the defense? Like, has Steve or Mayo emerged as, you know, that singular voice on the defensive end? I was curious going to the season what was going to be going on with that. So do you guys have insight on that situation or what?
Chris?
I mean, I don't have any more insight than what we had going into the season, which is it's still collaborative, but the guy who calls the defensive plays is Steve Belichick. I mean, Bill Belichick has stated that. Other people have stated that. So Steve Belichick calls the defensive plays. He's calling the defense. That's where it is. Gerard Mayo is still heavily involved in coming up with the game plan and all that stuff. The game plan for them obviously didn't work. You know, their big wrinkle was we're going to put seven defensive backs in on third down. That was their big wrinkle in the game, and we're going to put all these safeties out there. I think it was four safeties. Jabril Peppers was out there a ton. At least it was four safeties when before Duggar got hurt. And it didn't really work. They weren't able to get off the field. I think it sort of compromised their pass rush a little bit. And they wanted more speed on the field, which made sense. But Justin Fields was still scrambling for third downs and making demoralizing third downs out of thin air. So that was their big defensive wrinkle, and it was a fail.
There seems to be a stubbornness since Steve has been calling the plays. And I'll go back to last year, too, with sending the house in the red zone. You know, he did that to success in the windstorm game in Buffalo against Josh Allen, where it's all-out zero blitz, and they rushed him incomplete pass. This game, did you see this clip of the Manning cast? The screen pass to Herbert that went for the touchdown was Manning calls it. Peyton Manning looks at it as they're setting up. He goes, this is zero blitz. And it's in the red zone, obviously. And now this has been, you know, from the Bears' side of this, they said they did their homework. They know that Steve Belichick and the Patriots like to call a zero blitz when they get into the red zone. They almost baited them into it. There was no audible from the defense. The offense was waiting for it, and it ended up being a perfect play call. Now, Fields gets crushed on that play, but it's a great play call.
Yeah, Khalil Herbert. Screen, it was easy to screen to Khalil Herbert. It was an empty set.
Point of this, they were waiting for that. And Manning called it out, and to great success, he's like, look at this, perfect touchdown. Like, Peyton Manning immediately sniffed it out, as he would. He's one of the great quarterbacks of all time. But the point being is there seems to be this stubbornness, no matter what, at certain points, especially on a third down, that Steve Belichick's going to call an all-out zero blitz. And now teams are ready for it. Like, Chicago of all teams were on Monday night.
I think part of that is personnel based, in the sense of, you know, one of the things we talked about, and he's not going to play against the Jets, right? Well, Christian Barmore, he's going to help the pass rush. We haven't really seen that. He's been kind of quiet this year. And also, the idea was, okay, they're going to get someone to emerge opposite Matthew Judon, who leads the NFL in sacks. Has that happened?
No.
And so I think that they look at it and say, okay, if it's not Judon, how do we generate pass rush here? Oh, we have to bring extra guys.
The one thing I think, besides the, you know, the penchant to call these zero blitzes at times in the red zone, I think is now becoming obvious, is these mobile quarterbacks, like the real good ones, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and even Fields, who ran all over them and looked like a young Cam Newton on Monday night, they kind of don't have an answer for them. Like, when they really get going, these guys run all over them.
Because the Patriots are such a good fundamental team, and they're so good at stopping what's on the play diagram. But then when those guys start running around and it becomes just athlete versus athlete to a degree, I think athletically the defense, particularly at the second level, particularly at the linebacker level, isn't good enough. Yeah, I mean, that's why Jamie Collins is back. They're not good enough at that level. You know, when it goes from X's and O's to Jimmy's and Joe's, they struggle a little bit. And that's why I always see like a gazillion safeties on the field. And you see Duggar and Phillips down in the box, you know, trying to play basically linebacker at times.
Yeah, that was my other takeaway from Monday night was, oh, you mean Jelani Tavai isn't good enough? Like, it was all a matter of time.
You mean Jelani just a guy?
Yeah, like, that's very good. Make the shirt.
You like that one, huh?
Don't let the people blow you away from that one. That's a good nickname. But it was all a matter of time before their linebackers got exposed, and that finally came to fruition Monday night. Let's squeeze in Tommy and Lynn before we go to break here. Hello, Tommy.
What's up, boys? What's up, Gas? What's up, Murray? This is what I got to say about the Patriots. They got to win. This is a must-win game. Mac cannot have a bad game. Yeah, he has numbness in his toes, Mr. Numbness. And I got to say something about Brady. I want to squeeze a Brady thing.
Sure, always.
Down there in Tampa Bay, you think he's struggling and a divorce is on his mind with Giselle, even though they filed it yesterday? I want to know if that's been bothering him. and that team right there, because that team's not on the same page with him.
Tommy, I think to some extent, yeah, but I don't think that's all of it. In fact, why don't we touch on that? We come back. Long
sure.
commercial-free segment. We'll squeeze in more Patriots phone calls. Tommy had a great line inadvertently the other day. You're talking about this. And go Mac Jones, I guess. Like, yeah, that's kind of how I think we all collectively feel right now. This is going to be the guy. Go Mac Jones, I guess. We'll touch on the Brady thing and get to the Sports Hub Celtic Show. First of the season. Coming up on our long commercial-free segment next.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chris Gasper.
Oh my God.
And Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Do you feel like there's any similarities between the last three games in terms of the offense struggling?
You know, I think we struggled pretty much at everything. You know, we just struggled in the red area, struggled in third down, struggled in the run game, two-point plays, short yardage. Backed up, start first quarter, start of the third quarter, not very good offense football.
A miserable Tom Brady post-game Thursday night as the Bucs and Ravens kicked off week 8, and the Bucs lose again, their third straight. Lowly Pittsburgh, awful Carolina, who's trying to tank. And then a good Ravens team Thursday night, which they led 10-3 at halftime and ended up blowing that game. And so now they're 3-5 are the Bucs. And if you follow me on Twitter, if not at Big Jim Murray, you see the pinned tweet where the Simpsons, when it used to be funny in the early 90s, spoofed One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And it's Barney acting like Chief Broom, taking the pillow, saying, "I can't stand to see him like this." And it's Homer in the bed, who's supposed to be Randall, and he puts the pillow over his head and puts him out of his misery. And I say, I overlaid me over Barney and Brady over Homer, because I can't stand to see him like this. If it's going to be like this, Chris, I can't do it, because he is as miserable as the day is long, and I don't think it's about the divorce, which was apparently made official yesterday, at least
it was
on social media by both he and Giselle, and I'm sure that is weighing on him, but that's not all of it. We've seen this puss face before here in 2019, to some extent, late last year with this stupid Bucs team. He don't want to be there. He's given up on them. They've given up on him. It's a complete disaster. And true story, in Nashville last week with my wife, we're at a sports bar. Had some time before we took off Sunday. I was like, you know what, let's catch this Bucs-Carolina game. At least this should be a layup. That first series, when the ball clangs off old frying pan hands Mike Evans on the deep, what should have been a touchdown to put him up 7-0, I go, now they're going to lose by 20 to this team. And that's basically what happened.
You're right.
You saw it. And even Evans apparently said after the game, "I saw the light go out of us after that botched play." That fast, this team is gutless. They are broken, and I want him out of there. Like, I don't want, like, maybe there's, you see the zip on the ball. Is he the same guy? No. There has been a bit of a degradation in his play. There's no doubt about that. But if you put him on a trade him to the Niners, you cowards.
Yes.
The trade deadline's Tuesday. Trade him to the Niners. Make it happen. If he's still surrounded by a ton of talent and he's engaged and he wants to be there, you still got something there. But this with the Bucs, oh God, I've had it. I can't watch any more of this with him on this team.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough watch. And I think, again, as I said, congratulations to Felger and Maz, because they're finally somewhat accurate on Tom Brady. There is some decline there. And the biggest thing I notice is in the pocket, in terms of when he gets moved off his spot. You know, he's always been really adept at being able to slide in the pocket, reset and throw. Now that looks harder for him. You know, he looks sort of like a clumsy Clydesdale back there. And you saw a couple of throws the last 2 weeks where he gets moved off the spot, has to reset, maybe go a little to the right and sort of throw a little bit on the run, and the ball's just chucked into the ground.
Yeah.
I still think he can play, though. I mean, he still threw some dimes in that game. For me, I don't think it's so much the divorce, which would weigh on anybody, right? I think it's the way that team is built and certain things that he needs at this point in his career. He needs a stable, competent, capable interior of the offensive line. They don't have that. I never thought I'd miss O'Doyle rules, but I do. Ryan Jensen not having that center, that's killing Brady, and the rookie guard has been terrible. They don't have a viable tight end in the offense, so they can't stretch the middle of the field. They can't stretch the seams. They don't have a third receiver, and that's partially Brady's fault because he thought that Alex Guerrero could Mr. Miyagi Julio Jones, and that hasn't worked out. And they have no run game. Do you know that they are last in the NFL in yards per carry at 3, and that they are the only team in the NFL that doesn't have a run of at least 18 yards this year?
Oh, my God.
The only so what ends up happening is you saw it in the game, too. When it's 3rd and short, like 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, in the past with Fournette, they're like, well, they might run for this. Now they can't pick up those first downs, so they're automatic throwing downs for Brady. I think the heat is on Jason Light because they're too invested in this team and this year. The heat is on Jason Light to try and get some reinforcements at the trade deadline. And if they don't, I think this is like a 2009 type of season for Brady where his team, you remember that year, team wins a bad division, gets blown out in their first playoff game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's basically what Belichick said about that 09 offense. You know, Moss over the top, Welker underneath. If it's not that, we're done. With the Bucs, it's Evans over the top, Godwin underneath. Otherwise, they're done.
Let's see. Who would they have right now? Because they're still atop the division as of right now, right? I want to see who they would have. If they had to host the Giants would win by 20 points.
Daniel Jones would run for 200 yards.
Let's see. Oh, wow. Let's see.
They have a tough schedule. Next up for them is the Rams.
Oh, no, technically they'd be out right now. The Falcons are leading that division. So
yeah, because they've already played and lost this week.
They'd be on the bubble. Oh, my God, they're the 13th team in the NFC. The Bears are ahead of them.
I mean, it's bad. I mean, I don't know. Has Brady ever lost 5 of 6? I mean, they've lost 3 in a row and 5 of 6. It's really bad. And the thing I will say at this point again, you know, look, we're both accused of being Brady Bobos. I'm definitely team Brady. But I will admit there is decline there to the point where he's no longer – human spackle. He no longer can uplift an entire team and solve all the holes. Now, if there are holes, it affects his play.
Yeah.
And that's why next year, I think, to your point, I don't think it'll be this year, but next year, I think he'll be the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers because he's not going out like this. And now that the wife's gone, he doesn't have to, like, you know, he can play another year. I don't think he's going out like this. And I think prideful, arrogant Kyle Shanahan might finally wake up and be like, oh, wait, you mean I just can't make anybody a Super Bowl winning quarterback with my system? Well, I was talking to my dad, and he did mention he won 2.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.